and welcome to the Big Happy Life podcast. I'm Natalie Britt, and I'm a coach, trainer, and hypnotherapist. And this week, I was going to say I discovered something really important about myself, but I didn't discover it this week. I discovered it in 2016, and I ignored it because I didn't like it. So about 3 weeks ago, I started research for a book that I'm writing. And as part of that research, I returned to a book I've owned since 2016, having forgotten what I discovered the first time I read it. And so I started reading it, but this time the message hit. And I realized that I was seeing, finally, the key to a lock in my behavior that I have not been able to unlock. Despite the fact that I am a qualified coach, that I know so much about habits and behavior that I have created a model that I use with my clients that helps them understand what's keeping them stuck. I've even talked about it on this podcast. I've gone on to other people's podcasts as a guest and I've talked about this model. It's called BSET. And what I've discovered about myself fits into BSET, but it's at such a fine, minute, almost invisible level that I missed it in myself, but it explains so much. It explains how it's possible for me to have set such lofty, inspiring, motivating goals and become stuck in my efforts to pursue them. It explains how, after adopting my children, I became so profoundly depressed that I believed myself to be the world's worst human. I couldn't understand how it was possible for somebody to be as awful at motherhood as I felt I was. And that had an enormous impact on me. And this thing also explains how it's been possible for me to take 6 years to move my business about the same distance as many others in my business network have managed to achieve in 6 to 9 months. And it's all because I am rubber cement. Now, rubber cement has another name, but this other name is something that most of us turn away from. So I actually discovered that I am rubber cement back in 2016, but its other name was so abhorrent to me that I was like, no, I'm not that. I'm not that. This book is silly. Martin Seligman, father of positive psychology, is silly. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I am definitely not rubber cement. So if you are somebody who has lofty, inspiring, motivating goals, somebody who believes anything is possible, but you're also somebody who gets stuck, who repeats patterns over and over again, and despite yourself, you're like, what the hell is wrong with me? Why do I keep getting stuck? Then this episode is for you, because you might be rubber cement too. So let's dive in. This episode is brought to you by Big Happy Life on Substack. If what you hear in this episode resonates with you and you want to find out more, delve a little deeper, and get some advice and support so that you can unlock your own behavior and move forward with your goals, then visit Substack, search Big Happy Life, and subscribe. All right, so let me start by telling you about a little, I can't really call it an experiment, but yeah, I'm not sure what else to call it, so I'm going to call it an experiment. A little experiment that I did on Facebook and LinkedIn, and I asked people 3 questions. Now, when I tell you what the 3 questions are, you're going to immediately know what rubber cement is. Well, not immediately, but in the second question. So here's question one, answer yes or no. I am an overthinker. Now, in my little experiment, 10 people answered. I only did it 2 days ago, so maybe more will answer. But so far, 10 people have answered. And of those 10, 6 said, yes, I'm an overthinker. And 4 said, no. My second question, I am pessimistic. For this one, one person said sometimes, and the other 9 said no. And if you'd asked me before I read the book, I would have answered no too. I would have answered yes to the overthinker question and no to the pessimistic question. Because I'm not a pessimist. I don't see the glass half empty. I know that lots is possible. I completely believe that I can make amazing things happen and that amazing things are possible. But it turns out I don't fully understand what pessimistic means. And neither did the 10 people who answered my questions. So my third question was, what does pessimistic mean to you? And here are some of the things they said. It's the absence of hope. It's to see the negative in every situation, often ignoring the obvious positives. It's dwelling on the negative, less than ideal, or what can go wrong, instead of focusing on the positives. What's really interesting about some of these explanations is they have, in fact, got some of the hallmarks of pessimism, as Martin Seligman defines it, built into them. And that is partly why, I think, back in 2016, I turned away from this incredible and actually very useful revelation. There's a great quote that I've been using a lot in my work lately, and it says, "Not everything that we look at can be changed, but nothing can be changed unless we look at it." It's by James Baldwin. And for me, this is precisely one of those things. I saw it, went, yuck, no, and looked away. And as a result, many, many, many years have passed where I had the power to do something about it because it's actually not as bad as I thought. And so what I'd like to do with the remainder of this podcast is to share with you what pessimism or pessimistic thinking actually has at its heart, some of the very specific things you can look for in your own thoughts and in your words to determine whether you might be pessimistic too. And to know, before we go into any of that, that it's not a life sentence, it's not a personality trait, it's a way of thinking, and we can change the way we think. And now that I know this, and now that I understand the specifics of what to look for, I feel so powerful to implement this final piece of the puzzle that I have been looking for and been unable to see. So before I dive into it, before I go through all the specifics, if you would actually like to take Martin Seligman's test, pause here. Check the description with this episode, or if you are on the website or you're on Substack, it's in the show notes. You'll find it right near the top. Take the test. You just need to click the link, take the test. It will give you all the information that you need, and then come back and listen to find out what it all means. If you decide not to pause and you go ahead and listen to this, it will skew your results. So just one last chance to pause before we dive into the specifics. Okay, here we go. So I've already mentioned that pessimism is a type of thinking. And one of the most common phrases that we hear, and it featured a lot in those 10 descriptions around pessimism versus optimism, is glass is half empty, glass is half full. And that sort of touches the surface of the difference in the way of thinking. But it's actually finer tuned than that. Because pessimism isn't just negative thinking. Optimists can see the negatives in things, but they explain them differently. They explain them to themselves differently, and they explain them to others. And that changes how they feel about what happened and changes what they do next. And that's really the key here. So if we start with this phrase, glass is half empty, or the glass is half full. On the surface, yes, we can see that one sounds positive and one sounds negative. But in his book, Learned Optimism, Martin Seligman talks about pessimism as having three very specific characteristics. So when we have what he calls a pessimistic explanatory style, the way we explain things to ourselves and other people, we have three characteristics in our thoughts and in our words. The first is that we explain things with a personal slant. It's my fault. So if we take glasses half empty, glasses half full, well, the reason that the glass is half empty is because of something I did. It's my fault. And the way we might see that present in other areas of life can be some version of I'm not good enough. I can't do that. I don't have that skill. I don't have any willpower. I'm too lazy. These are the kinds of phrases that personalize and take ownership of the problem. Now, this was one of the reasons that back in 2016, I discounted the possibility that I could be a pessimist, because one of the things that I thought made me actually quite optimistic and very resourceful and empowered was the fact that I took responsibility for things. If something bad happened, you know, one of my children is doing something, it's my fault because I haven't taught them properly. Or if my kid lies to me, it's because I've made them feel that they need to lie. You know, that was the way I explained things to myself. But it means often I'm taking responsibility for things that in many cases are actually outside my control. But I thought it was empowering to do that. There's this phrase that Jim Quick uses where he says, it's the Spider-Man quote flipped around. So instead of with great power comes great responsibility, he says with great responsibility comes great power. And that really resonated with me. And so I have made a concerted effort to take responsibility for absolutely everything in my life. But it turns out that when we do that in situations where the outcomes are highly negative, we can, in fact, keep ourselves stuck. And yesterday when I was out walking with a friend and I was telling her about all of this and saying, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like this huge revelation. And she went, I think like that too. And then told me about a situation from many, many years ago where a boyfriend that she'd been with for many years ended up cheating on her and then leaving her. And she blamed herself for the fact that he had cheated because she hadn't been a good enough girlfriend. And that is precisely one of the things that if we look at it through the lens of, yes, this is empowering, we could say, well, in the next relationship, she might look at some of the things she brought to the relationship and say, I'm not going to do that this time. And maybe there is some empowerment to that. But there are ways in which this kind of thinking can keep us stuck, where we become people pleasers and we do things to bend ourselves and shape ourselves for the purposes of someone else. And that, at its heart, can keep us stuck. How do we know? Well, are we stuck? So let me give you an example from my life, from my business. So as I said, I'm 6 years in now, and I have spent over £20,000 on my training, on business coaching, on mentoring. And none of it has really, quote unquote, worked. And what I mean by that is I've gone into these mastermind programs and different things that people have offered where they're saying, you know, come in and within this many months, we can get you to 10K or 100K or whatever it is, whatever the goal is. And I'm like, woo, let's do it. You know, all I need is instruction and I just need somebody to tell me what to do and I will do it. And I'd get into these groups and I'd get into the programs and I would implement what they had told me to do, but it wouldn't have an instant result. And I'd be like, I must not be as good as the other people. I'm not as entertaining. This is one that I, on Instagram in particular, where I'm like, I'm just not entertaining. I'm not interesting. No one really wants to hear from me. And so when I've been told to do certain things to become visible in the business, I know what to do and I can sit quietly and I can graft and I can do the work. But when it comes time to get out there and the result isn't what I want it to be, I explain it as in some way my fault. But what that has done, if you go to my Instagram account, you go to my Facebook account, you go to LinkedIn, what you'll find is periods of time where I'm posting every single day, sometimes more than once a day, if something that I'm doing has prompted that I need to do that. And then there will be months of nothing. If you followed this podcast for a while, you'll have experienced the same thing where there's podcast, podcast, every week, Thursday, podcast, podcast, then nothing. Because then I'm like, oh, no one's listening. It's just not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm boring. And that explanatory style has made me stop in my tracks before reaching the tipping point where things have the capacity to change. That's what stuck feels like. You do the same things, you exhaust yourself, you stop, you come back again, and you repeat. You see the same pattern showing up. Maybe it's your health, maybe it's your relationships, maybe it's your business, but you keep seeing the same pattern show up, and it feels like at its heart, it's your fault. Then the probability is that there is some form of personalization in the way you're explaining the results you're getting. And taking responsibility for that. And it may be that there is some responsibility to be had there, because of course, entertaining stuff on Instagram just works better. So if I can be more entertaining, then sure, there's an option to do that, and it may make my Instagram account more successful. But holding on to the belief and repeating it in my head, I'm not interesting enough for this to work, that's the kind of thinking that can stop me in my tracks and has done multiple times. So that's the first thing to look out for. Are you personalizing whatever it is that you are experiencing, whatever your version is of the glass half empty? Is it somehow your fault? Now, the other two elements that Seligman talks about in pessimistic thinking have actually featured in some of the ways I've described my own thinking. The other two elements are pervasiveness and permanence. So let's look at pervasiveness. That means how widely does it spread? It's not a specific event. So if we go with glass half empty, that would mean the next glass is going to be half empty as well. And so is the one after that. Like this half empty glass is a sign of things to come. And this is what to expect. So if I take the Instagram example, if I'm not interesting enough on Instagram, well, that's true of Facebook as well. LinkedIn's the same. And so it's got this kind of pervasiveness that it spreads outwards. It's because I am just not an interesting person. Now it's like, it's got this huge expanse over, I made one Instagram post that no one was interested in, or at least that no one interacted with. And that is a specific event, but now it becomes something that is a sign of what's likely to happen with anything that I produce in future. Just people aren't interested in what I've got to say, and I am not interesting enough. So it expands beyond the specifics of the event, and it becomes something bigger. That's pervasiveness. And then permanence. Will the glass ever be full? Well, if my way of describing it is that I am not interesting enough, then that is a permanent problem because I could make 5,000 reels, but I am not an interesting person. So they're all going to be boring, which means I'm going to face this problem time and time again. Like I might as well give up right now because there's nothing I can do about it. The problem will exist no matter what. And that's what permanence is all about. And it's those three things together that cause us to stop. So we face a difficulty on the road towards the things we care about, the things we are motivated to achieve. But depending on how we explain those setbacks, it's my fault, it's bigger than just this one thing, it's going to last, and it's a sign of things to come. Those three parts of our thinking can stop us in our tracks. They even have the capacity to cause us to become depressed. If we feel helpless enough and this thing matters enough to us and we feel helpless to achieve it or helpless to change it, we can then become depressed. And that, oh my God, it blew my mind when I started thinking about how I had entered parenting back in 2016. And how deeply shamed I felt by myself for being effectively the worst human alive. To be like, who can't be a mum? I mean, God, it's just, it's the most awful revelation about yourself. These are the kinds of things that I was thinking. You think about the permanence, the personalization, and the pervasiveness, the all kind of all-encompassing, you're the worst human in the world. No wonder I got depressed, and no wonder I got stuck for much longer than the difficulty of my situation might have stopped somebody with optimistic thinking. So before I close up, let's have a quick look at what that might mean or what that might look like, somebody with optimistic thinking. And I'll use the easy example that I've been using already of Instagram. Okay, so I've made a post. It has gotten no traction whatsoever. If I had an explanatory style that was more optimistic, I would say, I've made a post that the algorithm on Instagram didn't like. So now it's not personalized to me. The cause of the issue resides somewhere else. It's because of something outside of something I did that explains why this thing didn't work. So if you have it with sports people, they might say, you know, the wind was really strong going against me, or something else in the environment caused me to not be able to do my best in that situation. And that's the other thing about optimistic thinking in that situation. It's not pervasive. It's not spreading. It's these specific circumstances led to this outcome this time. But next time will be different. And the explanation, therefore, is also not anything related to something that's permanent. It's not about a flaw in me or my content or something that cannot be changed. It's how I play the algorithm. It's what the weather's like on the day. It's what's happening in the stock market at this moment. And all of those different things, when we look at them as though they are a snapshot in time, and next time it's going to be different, we have a sense of possibility of something changing, which makes us feel hopeful rather than helpless. And that really is at the heart of it, the difference between optimism and pessimism, or optimistic thinking and pessimistic thinking. One gives you hope and makes you more likely to take action. The other one makes you feel helpless and less likely to take action, or at least less likely to take action that will change something and give you the possibility of getting another result. And in terms of permanence, an optimist, instead of saying it's never going to work, they would say it didn't work this time. So the nature of the problem is temporary. Now, all of this may sound like real fine-tuning, but the key difference between these two explanatory styles when something negative happens is that with a pessimist, our thinking can cause us to stop and get stuck. And with an optimist, it doesn't. It becomes a setback, recognized as a setback. They can see that the glass in this moment is in fact half empty, but it's one glass and there's more water to come. So it's not that big a deal. I'll go get more water and I can fill the glass. And then it will be full. And so it's, yes, about describing half empty, half full, but it's more about who's going to go and fill it the rest of the way. And depending on why we think the glass is half empty and whether we believe we have any power to fill it, will determine what we do next. And that is what makes us either rubber concrete or feather light and able to fly. In this episode, I've really only talked about our explanatory style around negative events. Next week, I'll talk about our explanatory style around positive events and how that differs with a pessimistic explanatory style versus an optimistic explanatory style. So I hope you'll join me for that. And in the meantime, if you would like to subscribe to the podcast, please do so. You can also subscribe to the Big Happy Life page on Substack, where you then get notifications for any podcasts and also any blogs and other content that I release, which will all help, particularly if this resonated with you and you were like, oh my God, that's me. Then welcome to the Rubber Cement Club. And we are going to unstick ourselves together. So I'd love to have you on board, and you can subscribe via the podcast, you can subscribe via Substack. And if you have found this episode to be interesting and you know others who would find it interesting, please do share it far and wide. And all that's left to say is thanks for listening.